Okay, so I'm going to kind of follow up Baranov's talk. I'm going to focus on the X-ray properties of these sources instead of on the optical properties of the globular clusters containing them. And I'm also going to give a fairly lengthy introduction about the spectral properties of X-ray sources. And when I discuss that work, I'll discuss work that's been done in collaboration with Paolo Coppi, the stuff on globular clusters and elliptical galaxies is doing that in collaboration with Arnav Kundu and Steve Zepp. Okay, first of all, sorry for some definitions. I'm just going to brush through this since Arnav already went over it. But when we talk about low-mass X-ray binaries, we're talking about Roche-Loeb overflowers. When we talk about high-mass X-ray binaries, we're talking about accretion driven by winds from massive stars. High or low mass refers to the mass donor, not the mass accretor. So either one could contain a neutron star or a black hole. Okay, so what are the spectral models that are typically fit to the X-ray spectra of these sources? People normally start with multi-temperature disk black body models. So the temperature of the disk at a given radius goes as r to the minus 3/4. This was first shown by Shakiro and Sunyaev in 1973 and also by Novikov and Thorne in the same year. And the inter-disk temperature goes as the luminosity to the 1/4, the mass of the system to the minus 1/2, and the inter-disk radius divided by the Schwarzschild radius to the minus 1/2 power. But in the mid-70s, it was found that these spectral models were insufficient for fitting the spectra of many of the X-ray sources that we observed. There were way too many hard X-rays. So what people invoked was confinization models. So they suggested that we had a geometrically thick, optically thin region that was much hotter than the standard accretion disk. And these produced spectra that look an awful lot like a power law with a cutoff if it's thermal confinization, and a pure power law spectrum if it's non-thermal confinization, thermal and non-thermal referring to the electron distributions. These thermal confinization cutoffs typically occur around 100 keV or so, so we're not seeing them in at least in the Chandra bands. You typically have to use something like OSSI to see these cutoffs. Okay. And the other thing is that if you have an optically thick, low-temperature confinization region, you can raise the apparent disk temperature. Okay. So there may be a little too much information on this slide, but can everyone read that? Okay, well, I'll make sure I'll go over it in detail then. Okay, so neutron star systems. So there are two classes of neutron star systems, atoll sources and Z sources. There's a third class called the X-ray pulsars, but those are predominantly found in high-mass X-ray binary systems, so they're probably not going to contribute much to what we're discussing today. Atoll sources are typically found at below about 1% of the Eddington luminosity, some flexibility in that number, and they have hard power law spectrum. The brighter atoll sources and Z sources fit well to thermal confinization models in a roughly 3 keV optical depth of 10 medium. And the quiescent transients Bob Rutledge discussed yesterday, they essentially show a thermal spectrum, sometimes with an extra power law. And the other thing is neutron star systems generally show an extra black body component. So you have to add an extra black body into your spectral fit. So probably what we're seeing is one black body from the surface of the neutron star, and then otherwise a disk model that looks an awful lot like the black hole systems. Okay, in the black hole systems, we have what we call a low hard state. So that has a gamma or a DNDE of with a power law index of about 1.5 to 1.7, cuts off somewhere around 200 keV, and it occurs below about 2 to 10% of the Eddington luminosity, and we see radio jets in these systems, or not necessarily direct evidence of jets, but we see strong radio emission. And there's what we call the quiescent state in these systems tends to look pretty much just like a lower luminosity extension of the low hard state. And nobody's come up with a definition that satisfies me for what the break point is between a quiescent system and a low hard state system. High soft state then occurs at above 2 to 10% of the Eddington luminosity. And you see a KT of about 1 keV disk black body, a weak power law tail, and the radio emission turns off. Then we see a very high state, which looks like the high soft state, but this weak power law tail becomes a stronger power law tail. We get more variability in the light curves, and we sometimes see some transient radio emission. Okay, so thermal confinization models fit basically all of this data, although occasionally, especially in the higher luminosity states, we need some non-thermal electron population. So most low-mass X-ray binaries and a few of the high-mass X-ray binaries sample two or more of these spectral states. And hysteresis in the transition luminosities is routinely seen. So just getting a luminosity isn't necessarily going to tell you what spectral state a system is in. And if you want more details on this, you can see review papers by Tanaka and Lewin and Novak in 1995. Okay, and this is just a summary of what I just said. I just wanted to make sure it ended up in the final webpage version. I'm just going to skip over that. Okay.
You don't have to actually show it to get it on the web.
Oh, I don't? Okay. Well, I barely show it. Okay, so what do these spectra look like in Chandra and in the observations of elliptical galaxies, and why do we need XMM to really understand what's going on? Chandra covers 0.5 to 8 keV, which is a range in the X-rays which is easy to focus, but not necessarily the optimal for looking at black hole candidates or neutron star candidates. And the effective area drops severely above about 4 keV. The Z sources look like relatively hard power law. The atoll sources are too faint to see. The high soft states look like gamma equals 1.4 power laws. The very high and high soft states are very hard to distinguish because the real lever arm for figuring out which you're in is above about 4 keV, where the Chandra effective area drops off. Low hard states of black holes are probably invisible for most of the studied ellipticals, even though they have bolometric luminosities, which would put them into the range where we're seeing. The problem is that their bolometric luminosity is dominated by soft gamma rays. XMM covers 0.1 to 15 keV, and it has much better higher energy sensitivity, so we should be able to find the tails in the very high states, and probably also find the extra black bodies in the neutron star cases with much more ease. So we need to think of Chandra as the X-ray Hubble and XMM as the X-ray Keck. We use Chandra to find out which sources are in a globular cluster. You can't do that with XMM because the positional sensitivity will give you too many false matches. But then we use XMM to follow up on the spectra and see what we're really looking at. Okay, so now a few comments on the Eddington limit. The Eddington limit is 1.4 times 10 to the 38. Comes from comparing radiation pressure on electrons with the gravitational attraction. It's kind of like the speed limit. It's okay to exceed it as long as you don't do it for too long or by too much. So you can get a factor of two easily by accreting helium and metals. That was something that came up yesterday during Eric Kolker's talk. And you can gain arbitrary factors through non-spherical accretion. You can dissipate the energy away from where most of the gas is. Then you're not putting the radiation pressure onto the gas. Or you can have beaming due to geometric reasons, or you can have relativistic beaming. And these two models have been suggested for the ultra-luminous sources as a way to make them without an intermediate mass black hole. And you can also gain small factors by Klein-Nishino limit corrections, especially if the power is coming out mostly in the gamma rays. Okay, so what's special about elliptical galaxies? There's a little no star formation in the last giga-year. Hence, you should have no high mass X-ray binaries and no persistent low mass X-ray binaries above about 10 to the 37 ergs per second. Otherwise, you would have accreted all the fuel from your companion star. You can get around this by making sources that turn on late in their evolutionary time, or by having sources which have a very low duty cycle, as suggested by Pirro and Bilston. So that makes these, for the most part, clean systems for studying globular effects on X-ray binary formation. And also, there are many more globular clusters and low-mass X-ray binaries than the local group galaxies. So the X-ray properties of elliptical galaxies pre-Chandra. We saw X-ray bright ellipticals with thermal spectra of around 1 keV. X-ray faint ellipticals showed this thermal component plus a hard power law component. Before Chandra, there was a debate about AGN versus X-ray binary. A correlation was found, as Pepe mentioned, by Cinquieri and Fabiano, 1985, showing a correlation between optical and hard X-ray luminosities that argued for a low-mass X-ray binary origin. But there are people still suggesting an AGN origin. Early Chandra observations of the faint, X-ray faint ellipticals solved this problem. They found that a very large fraction of the sources were in X-ray binaries, and they also put upper limits on the central X-ray luminosity of less than 10 to the 39 ergs per second. Okay, so the X-ray luminosity functions. So this was first studied carefully by Sarazin, Irwin, and Bregman, and they found a broken power law luminosity function with a break right around 3 times 10 to the 38 ergs per second, which corresponds roughly to the Eddington luminosity for a neutron star. There's been some debate about whether this is a selection effect. I think it's probably not, because we see the same break in many different elliptical galaxies with different exposure times, different distances, different amounts of gas. And also, this break is at roughly 50 photons. So at least in some galaxies, it's almost certainly a real break. In other ones, the claim that it's a selection effect may be valid. So now in NGC 4472 in particular, we see the standard result. Luminosity functions for the matching and non-matching with globular cluster sources are the same. So that suggests that we have a common origin. And it also suggests that multiple sources in globular clusters as the cause for the break of the luminosity function is not the case. There really are sources that are accreting above the Eddington limit for a neutron star. And we also find numerous sources well above the Eddington limit for a neutron star that are in globular clusters. This is perhaps the best case for black holes in globular clusters. 10 of the 30 matches are above the standard Eddington limit for a neutron star. 7 of the 30 matches are above the limit even for helium accretion. And one is above 10 to the 39 ergs per second. Some of these 7 out of the 30 are just barely above 4 times 10 to the 38 Hertz per second. So we could be just having distance problems or random photon fluctuations causing them to look too bright. But this one at 1.1 times 10 to the 39 Hertz per second, I think you have a very difficult time producing that from a neutron star without invoking some strange super Eddington flow. And perhaps not all ellipticals are the same. NGC 720 seems to show an excess of bright sources in the Jeltema et al. Paper in 2003, but it's possible that they overestimated the distance of that galaxy and that caused all of their results to look like all the sources were too bright. So here's a quick plot. I'll show both of these so you can just see the luminosity functions are the same. That's what I was pointing out. Here are the spatial distributions again. Okay, and Calabria cluster color effects. So we found that the blue clusters, the X-ray sources had an integrated spectral index of 1.02 for a power law. The red had 1.46. These are 90% error bars. This is standard in X-ray astronomy. So the fact that they don't overlap at all should tell us that this is a real effect, at least in a statistical sense. And a similar result was found in M31 by Erwin and Bregman. But we probably need more galaxies to test these correlations, as there are only 7 X-ray sources in the blue clusters in NGC 4472, and it may be that a couple of oddballs are biasing the results. So there is a real difference in the integrated spectra, but whether that will hold up when we look at more systems is questionable. But a possible explanation is that there are a few very bright, very hard sources in the blue clusters that's vaccine, and it's possible that these are neutron stars that are slightly super Eddington. We would expect that neutron stars at a given luminosity would have a slightly harder spectrum than black holes at the same luminosity because their inner radii are going to be smaller. And XMM would have probably a better chance of IDing the neutron stars spectrally. Okay, and let's see. Okay, so one more thing we did was I'm going to skip this. Okay, so look for spectral state correlations with these sources. So as you remember, I said that we go from high soft state to very high state at about 30% of the Eddington luminosity. So I did a break. So I made 2 samples, one between the Eddington limit for a neutron star and 30% of the Eddington luminosity for a 10 solar mass black hole, and one for all the sources brighter than that. Looked for a hard tail in the so-called very high state sources. I found one, but when I restricted the sample that I looked at to only the sources in globular clusters to eliminate the possibility of background AGN biasing the result, the tail went away. So again, this is something we'd want to do with XMM, where we'd have better sensitivity to a hard tail. We'd also just want to look at more galaxies and see if the tail pops up when you have better statistics for the photon numbers. So it's a iffy case right now. Okay, so conclusions. X-ray source properties of globular clusters sources are consistent with those of the field sources. Blue clusters probably have a harder spectrum than the red clusters, but we want to see this effect in more galaxies. And spectral IDs of individual neutron star and black hole sources may be possible with deep XMM spectra. So I apologize if that was too fast.
You didn't get the red light. Questions? More questions? Yeah, Pepe.
Could you say a bit more about this spectral differences correlation with the blue and the red clusters, and also the results in Erwin's paper?
Okay. So what I did was I took all of the sources in the red clump of the globular cluster distribution, all the sources in the blue clump of the globular cluster distribution, and I made one integrated X-ray spectrum of each of those, and then fit a power law model to it. I also did it with a few other spectral models. And in each case, it was roughly a 4 sigma result that the blue sources were either harder or had a hotter temperature or something like that than the red ones. One of the problems is that there are only these 7 sources in the blue globular clusters, and 2 of them contribute 40% of the luminosity of the blue globular clusters. So that's why I'm not confident that this is a result that will definitely hold up in all other galaxies once we look at it. And I'm not 100% sure on the details of what Jimmy did, but so just correct me if I say something wrong. But what I think he did was he looked at the metal-rich, metal-poor globular cluster systems in M31, and then also the field bulge sources, and found a correlation with metallicity and spectral index, and that was based on old Rosat data. Is there anything I said wrong or that needs to be amplified? Oh, you didn't? Okay. Okay, just the globulars. Okay. Oh, it was the bulge globulars. Okay. Okay.
You mentioned at some point that some neutron stars may be radiating super Eddington.
Mm-hmm.
Can you comment on that?
So I made a brief throwaway remark that a few of the blue globular cluster neutron star sources might be slightly super Eddington. I found that the two brightest sources in the blue globular clusters were, I think, roughly 4 times 10 to the 38 and roughly 5 times 10 to the 38 ergs per second. And they had two of, I think, the 5 hardest spectra out of the 30 matches. And so I can't think of a black hole spectral model that people use in the Milky Way that would cause a spectral index of 0.8 in the Chandra bands like I found for these. But a neutron star model with this thermal compensation at 3 keV would fit to that fairly nicely. So my guess is, well, maybe we just overestimated the distance of this galaxy by a little bit, or maybe it's a 10% fluctuation from photon counting noise. It's more likely that they're right at the Eddington limit than that they're over it.
Got a question about the luminosity function.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, we both thought the other one was going to do more of it.
Right, so keep going back.
How to go up here? Here we go. Okay.
So Eric Kolker showed yesterday that a lot of the neutron stars in globular clusters are capable of getting to 4 by 10 to the 38.
Yes.
But there might well be a little bit of range in that, and Philip's been working a lot on this question of the helium content and the question of what is the Eddington limit. So, I mean, this break appears to be sharp, but I guess I would like to have a little bit of discussion of is it possibly, if there's a range of Eddington limits, or you can just talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's only this is at the place in the luminosity function where there are about 10 sources. So I think we want to start looking at more galaxies and build up an integrated luminosity function for the local universe before we really start to talk about whether that's a smooth or sharp break.
This is only one. I mean, there's many, many ellipticals that have been studied. So
Maybe
Jimmy Irwin wants to comment on this break, or
Can I interrupt for a minute while we move the microphone? Okay. So the other thing I wanted to mention in response to, because I think there's a general thinking that the ultra compact binaries are more likely to be in blue globular clusters, so they're more likely to be accreting helium. So that's another reason why we might think that these very bright sources would be more likely to happen in blue globular clusters than in red ones. I forgot about that. So, okay. But yeah, now Jimmy. Okay.
The break in the luminosity function has varied a bit from galaxy to galaxy, between 2 and maybe 5 times 10 to 38 hertz per second. Very recently, a grad student of Craig Sarazen has looked at a couple of galaxies, NGC 4365 and NGC 4382, and does not find evidence for this break. More of a cutoff at much, much higher luminosities, around 8 or 9 times 10 to 38 hertz per second, which is where you're beginning to run out of sources anyways. So this break looked to be more uniform a year ago than in the very recent past.
And that's, that break is at a similar location to where Geltema found it in NGC 720, but that's a more gas-rich elliptical galaxy, so there's more risk in that galaxy, I think.
That's right.
But, yeah.